Hi there. Welcome to this, the sixth episode of A Couple Takes on MS. Hi, I'm Dan Digman.
And hi, I'm Jennifer Digman.
And we're A Couple Takes on MS. I'm walking.
And I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward. And for this episode, as we had talked before, we are going to talk about MS mantras and music therapy. And this is something that's near and dear to our hearts because these are what helped us, or at least I'm speaking for you, Bob. Babe.
I was going to... Who are you, Wolverine? Bob.
I started to say, babe, and then I was like, dude, just like sort of look, I'm looking right at you. I think that's what I was going to do, is say for you, but... And then I said...
Regain your composure.
Lounge hour part two, apparently. Even though we hadn't had anything to drink.
Not yet. Yes.
No, yeah, I was going to say. But anyway, back to this. But at least the mantras and music therapy have helped me deal with living with multiple sclerosis greatly. And so I don't know about you, comma Jennifer. How have they helped you?
Well, they've helped me. I can't specifically say, oh, this got me. Well, probably I could if I think back to really difficult moments in my past 23 years that music has helped me out. But I think having music to comfort me at those times or to give me strength and support, I definitely think music has helped me. And I think, again, it's not exclusively the MS community that is strengthened or supported by music. As I turn over and look at my socially distant, fully masked, our producer, Ryan. Ryan, how is music? Has music been instrumental for you?
It's definitely helped me manage stress in my life, yeah. But before we get to the main topic, Dan wanted to talk about, since we're now in the midst of May.
We're on the precipice of summer and warm temperatures as this is coming out, just as Memorial Day is upon us. And we wanted to talk about dealing and coping with heat and heat sensitivity and living with multiple sclerosis. And with that, we want to refer you back in case you missed. Check out episode 4, Lounge Hour, where we really address a lot of the tips of how you can overcome heat and being hot and dealing with the flare-ups during the summer with multiple sclerosis.
And then the rest of the episode, we're bull crapping and drinking, and it's fun.
And it was a good time. I think it's just basically, we talked a lot. And so, and no, to this point, we have not watched The Wire.
Well, cheater, cheat kind of for listener land. We are recording this the same day we recorded episode 5. So
yes,
I'm not going to grill you about not having watched The Wire in the 40 minutes it's been since we hit the mics off.
Well, I appreciate it. You're merciful yeah, producer.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at. I think we don't really need to rehash things about heat sensitivity and multiple sclerosis. I just really encourage you to go back to episode 4 for some great tips on how you overcome heat in the summer living with multiple sclerosis.
I'm with you. With the heating vest or the cooling vest, I don't really know if there's anything more to add because... Yeah, still stupid cold in Michigan.
I was going to say
it's finally getting 70 degrees, but
it's still cold.
Yeah.
So moving on to the episode of this podcast, and I think we all, I'm sure there, everybody in listener land, you have an MS mantra, you have something that helps you move forward. But we were talking about this. What is a mantra? We're just thinking, I think it's sort of accepted. It's like, oh, I have a mantra. Well, what I don't know specifically. What is it?
And a mantra, it's a good question. It's supposed to help you clear your consciousness out of the noise so that you can make room for one idea you want to concentrate on. A mantra is an idea, a philosophy, or a world overview concentrated in a sentence, a phrase, or even a word. And I think that definition is just one definition that I found for what a mantra is. But a mantra for me in my head, I, you know, Ryan, like you were talking about, and Dan, you too, that it's just a word to like kind of clear all the noise and the noise and the garbage in your head, just to get you centered, to focus, you know, something like that, just where you can calm down. And for me, my mantra since I've been diagnosed with MS comes from my musical love of Tom Petty. And I can just hear him say, I won't back down. You know, you can stand me up at the gates of hell and I won't back down. And it's hell being multiple sclerosis. Let's be honest, when that disease is rearing its ugly head, sometimes I won't back down. When I had trigeminal neuralgia, for instance, that's when that mantra kept coming back, that this is bad, but I'm better. I can handle this.
And we talk about that, and with the trigeminal neuralgia, has it always, I mean, in these 20 plus years that you've lived with multiple sclerosis, has it always helped?
I think that's the interesting thing about a mantra is there are moments where different words resonate with you, where you're like, you know, I go back to, I'm dating myself here, but shortly after I was diagnosed with MS, there was a TV show called Ally McBeal. Fun show, Calista Flockhart.
With the dancing baby, yeah.
With the dancing baby, exactly. And Calista Flockhart's character, Ally McBeal, was kind of a head case.
Lovingly. They had unisex bathrooms, right?
Yes, they did. It was a great show. And she saw her therapist, and her therapist told her to get a theme song in her head, something to, again, like, center her and just focus her and remind her that she was in control. And I think way back in 97, that's when I started to lean on Tom Petty, and I really thought, I won't back down. And so that for me has been like my theme song, which now to me is kind of a mantra that I won't back down. How about you, Dan? I mean, and I'm sure Mr. Springsteen will probably come up, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, that's where you find your strength and support. So I'll stop talking. Well, I want to hear about your mantra.
Well, it's not, I mean, it's not like I went and said, oh God, Bruce, speak to me. It's just like, it's kind of like all these things, everything that happens in your life, there's just, sometimes the songs hit you at that right moment, because the one, and yes, I just put it out there on the table. Of course, it's Springsteen, but it's like the one Springsteen song that has given me the mantra before MS was just one I kind of glossed over. I didn't really love it or hate it. It was there. It was a song. It was good, but it's from the song Jackson Cage, which actually then is on the first disc of the double disc of The River. But the line from that is, it don't matter just what you say. Are you tough enough to play the games they play? Or will you just do your time and fade away? And it's like, you know, that just truly, it was within like a month or two, I'd say a month of being diagnosed. It just, listening to that song, just for whatever reason, just hit me. And it's just like, you know, it was almost like a call to action for me. And I think that's why it truly, for these 20 plus years, has just always been that call to action. And it's just like, it gives you the opportunity to be sad, to be frustrated about the disease, but it's just like, are you tough enough to play the games they play, i.e. the MS, or will you just do your time and fade away? And I'm just like, I'm not going to just fade away. It's like, I'm better than this, and you're not going to let the disease get the best of you. And so those are things, and you know, take it or leave it. I realize whether you like Springsteen or not, those are the lines. Dang, that's what's pushed me through. You know, it's not like I go to Jackson Cage every day and say, Bruce, talk to me today. That's always there, especially like you say, with you had your trigeminal neuralgia. I had other things. It's going to be tough, and you're going to have setbacks. And what's going to get you through. And there's so much, and there's so many more lines from that. That particular song just is like a treasure trove of mantras or words, inspiration that push me. I'm not here to say, Jennifer, Ryan, you guys, you need to listen to this and you do this. Like, no, it's like MS mantras are like MS as a disease. It affects everybody differently. So, you know, what works for you as a mantra, I might be, you know, and totally take the Tom Petty. I mean, I love Tom Petty as much as the next listener. But it's just, how do you move forward?
Do you think there's somebody that has the Chumbawamba song as their mantra? Earnestly?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get knocked down.
Knocked down and I'll get up again.
Because, like, I don't know, it's always made fun of, but I'm like, that is like a good sentiment, but at the same time, that song is like, if I never hear it again, I'll be fine.
Ryan, do you have MS notwithstanding? I mean, obviously you don't have MS, but I mean, I want to say that those of us with MS don't have the market on mantras and music to get us through. Do you have one? And obviously there's tons of music, but I mean, like one line that's like your go-to guarantee, or one song, one word.
I don't think so. Like, I have a couple songs that when I'm in a bad mood, if like the song, it's usually whatever the most recent thing I've been into. Like, I had Chevelle is a band I like a lot. It's a three-piece band from Chicago. Vitamin R, yeah.
Oh, yes, that's what it is. Yes, yes. Yeah.
But I've followed them since I first saw them at Ozfest forever ago, and they were like, their first EP was just about to come out, and I was like, how are three dudes making this much noise? Like, I like this. But like, I had like a rough time when I first moved to Austin because the job I had there was awful, and I hated my boss because like he was just terrible at his job and couldn't manage people.
Wow.
I think it's La Gorgola or something is the name of the album, and there's a song on that called An Island, and it's like basically like you want to take somebody and put them on a desert island and then leave. And like that song with him, I'm just like, whenever I get frustrated, angry, that's been kind of the most recent good song that I can be like, I'm mad right now and I need to vent. And so I just think about chucking that jerk on an island and then going away in a boat and be like, bye. So yeah, I mean, but I don't have a specific line that, I don't know, bolsters me. I use music as a vent more than anything else.
When I think that's where, because we talk the mantras, and I think there is something that we'll have in the liner notes and stuff. But there was an article that was in Healthline, and it's my MS mantra, and it's seven influencers share what keeps them going. And full transparency, Jennifer and I are in that, you know, talking about Springsteen and Tom Petty. But I mean, there's just so many other people with MS that, you know, talking about, you know, what their lines, what keeps them moving forward. And it's not just mantras. I mean, we can talk music therapy. I mean, and that's a whole big thing in terms of music as therapy. And just, I mean, when I went to college, there were a number of my friends that were majoring in music therapy, and it just goes beyond that, because in music can be the lyrics, it can be...
Well, it can have a power to focus, to get your nerves firing in a different way and recuperate.
Yeah, I'd mentioned to Jen, and I actually tweeted it while I was in, we mentioned previously in the last episode that I had a blood clot scare and went to the ER, and while I was sitting in the ER, like watching my blood pressure on the monitor, I knew it was way too high. Like, I Googled it and I'm like, oh no. But I put in my earbuds and was listening to music and trying to calm my breath. And then I just literally watched my blood pressure lower just from having music to focus me and push me in the right direction.
And to calm you down.
I actually tweeted out, it's like, music is magic. Like, I just watched this happen. Like, the physical result of me sitting here just listening to music. It's like scientifically recorded, like it happened.
Yes, and you know, not only that, but music can help, you know, improve your coordination and your concentration. I know, Dan, you were talking about, which is odd to me because I'm not a huge fan of the kind of music that you use to help you focus and concentrate, but I think that's interesting.
I didn't realize how much I like jazz, But I do. It's just like in the morning, like at work, I can't listen to music, as it were, with like lyrics and everything. And I can't listen to like heavy guitar, drive, everything. But I just like having that jazz music, or like just instrumental, like your piano, drums, saxophone, just like a quartet, quintet, whatever, where it's just like, it's music, it's and it keeps you calm, and you're just like going through, and as I'm reading, as I'm writing, as I'm editing, it's just to have that. And I was thinking, oh, if I code it, you know, sometimes when I'm doing coding work and stuff, I can listen to other music things, rock music, Eagles, whatever. But you're just like, yeah, just the jazz. I just like that calm, that light center. It helps you to focus and stay on track.
I can see that.
And probably help with your cognitive abilities, just to, like you said, to get your focus and to strengthen that and shut out the other noise if in your brain or just something like that. And then you can't talk about music without talking about the effect it has on your anxiety and your stress.
Absolutely.
And I mean, not to cut you off, Jennifer, but you say that. So then I turn to Ryan, and you're talking about reducing stress. What care to share when you were in the ER? Like, what is, you saw your blood pressure go down? What were you listening to?
I was listening to Cam Cole, who I'd played a video of you guys before. Yes. He's a one-man band from London, and stuff's really good. He was featured in Ted Lasso, like in a couple episodes, and he's just, you know, it's bluesy, kind of rockish sort of stuff, and it's actually, as you were talking about jazz, like it's keying me more into blues that I'd never really had, like this is becoming my avenue into that. And then I was also listening to Tal Wilkenfeld. She's an Australian bass player. I think she might have done a session with Springsteen. Like, she sat in on a ton of records. Like, she's super good. And I think she's like crazy, like younger than me for sure. But like, she's a world famous musician that only has one album that came out not that long ago. I think she was on Marc Maron's podcast or something, but she just played, like, she's just a bass player, but not just a bass player, but she started as a bass player, but she's a brilliant musician. And then she's just like, I'm going to make my own album. And then she just walked in and started playing a guitar and made up a whole album, basically. And like the two of them on the same, like kind of mixed playlist, just my head just emptied right out.
And just,
just calm water, serene as a duck on a pond.
And that's incredible that someone has a gift, an ability that they can do that and they can share that with you. That music can get you in that place.
It is magical.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when I want to get fired up to do something, you know, when I want to have the power to ride my leg bike or to stand in my standing frame, sometimes if I'm feeling mopey and poopy that day, I'll put on some Pearl Jam. You know, Corduroy will always get the party started for me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm fierce. I can do this. The waiting drove me mad. And then I'll get me up in that standing frame. It's just that little bit of music. And, you know, I think that that's a power and talent that I can't imagine. That's why I have so much respect for people that can create like that and then share that gift with others. And, you know, you've seen, I'm sure, things where music can help with Alzheimer's and dementia patients, and the power it has to help improve gait with patients with multiple sclerosis. Just things, you know, where something that we love can have double effect. It can boost our mood, but then it can also help with actual life.
And that's where, like, when I used to run, you talk about your standing frame, but I mean, I had my running set list. I had like four different running set lists that were done and, you know, crafted them just right. So they were like right there. That's cool. I can't hit it too hard as a warm up, this one. And then you have that. And I always had the coming home. I had, Jesus of Suburbia from Green Day, because at that point late in the run, I would start dragging my left foot, and stuff, but I mean, just because of the way the beat was, it's just like that you just had to make sure your feet were going at in time with the song. Mm-hmm. And you have it loud and you do, and it just like, it picks you up, it boosts you. I mean, that's where you watch athletes, you see things, people are on the sidelines warming up. They have that music. They're just getting focused and centered. I think that what's really nice about music as a whole, though, is it's like, it's there for you 24/7. And I mean, wherever you are, whatever you need. And that's like when people say, you know, Dan, what's the best Springsteen? I'm like, you know, it really depends on where I'm at, what my mood is, what I need. And so it's just like, you know, one day the song that I can tell you what's the best, and not just saying Springsteen, but the best song ever, whatever your musical tastes are, someday whatever works for you today isn't going to be what you need tomorrow, isn't going to what I'm going to need in an hour from now.
Yeah, especially with an emotional attachment to a song. Like, yeah, it's, I mean, I'm fine today, but I was anxious as heck the other day. Yeah, so I was like, you know, those songs now like helped me through a thing, so I'll hopefully, you know, use them later.
And music is, it's like a judgment-free zone, and no one's going to, I you know, if you have whatever helps you musically, I can't judge you on that. I mean, if honestly, if you said the theme song to Sesame Street is my musical mantra in dealing with MS, I can't cast judgment. And there's just like a level of respect when it comes to music that it's like, I don't agree that song would do nothing for me, but that works for you.
And again, like, you know, I had said Tom Petty and I won't back down. That's a mantra. That's music that I find power in. But if I'm feeling nostalgic, maybe I'll go Tom Petty, American Girl. And that'll remind me of college and days when I still could walk. And that those memories, that'll get me through. That'll pump me up, cheer me up. And so that's why I think music is so important. And it's worth, you know, finding something, you know, finding something to center you. And it's accessible. And it can be a church hymn. It can be a verse. You know, I know that we go to church services where Pastor Dana will just have us repeat the same piece of scripture over and over. And it's very powerful, you know, and that can really center you and get you focused.
Well, it's like almost like a meditation. It's like, you know, when you're talking in the ERs, it's like that sort of thing that centers and grounds that, you know, to move forward.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, when you see a movie and music is like super powerful.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And just like the scenes are, I mean, I just feel like there's like music is so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I get what you're saying. Like,
like
the piano tune in a dog commercial can make you cry or something. Because you're like, this dog is eating the food.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I sometimes think like I need to just take a moment and just calm the heck down and just take a breather. And music will like do that.
Yeah. It can be the opposite, though. Like, they do that. Like, some of the music in movies and stuff is actually, like, scientifically figured out to make you feel a certain emotion in a certain scene. Like, they know what response most people have to certain instruments and that sort of stuff. So, like, you know, the swelling violin as the guy takes the arrow in the chest or whatever. It's like it's meant to invoke a response.
Or, like, when you're watching a movie and it's really suspenseful.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like the theme song to Jaws, you know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Well, sometimes you come over watching a television show, and then the music will just kind of take like a ominous sort of turn, and you can feel your heart racing a little bit.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, and you can feel that where you're in the moment of the music. And just, It's so interesting that music, something you're hearing with your ears, can have a reaction with your heart, with your blood pressure, where you're just like, I didn't think I cared that much, but obviously I do. Just because I'm scared for these people that are not even real.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then that's how they do it with the music or with the movies. Then, like, you as a viewer know where it's going just by the type of music they're playing. Because, yeah, it's just like, okay, I know this is going to get sad. Okay, I know I need to be scared. Okay, I know. And then just how, like you said, Ryan, however it makes you feel. It's like right now, they're Field of Dreams, and I can't watch that without crying at least twice, and you know. And it's just like if we were sitting here right now and you played the music from that scene in Field of Dreams, I'd probably be like Pavlov's dog and just start crying because you know. It's like, hey, Dad, you want to have a catch? It's like, oh, my God. And so, and it is. And like, so, you know, it's not in Jaws, but you could play the Jaws theme. And yeah, you just, you know, this evokes that. And so then that's why the music therapy works so well in dealing with illness and just ways that you know that it can pick you up or knock you back down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get knocked. Don't try.
See, and it comes full circle.
Full circle. That was my first job. Well, not my first, but...
You were in Chumbawamba?
No, my first kind of big girl job. My coworker, he loved that song.
Oh, okay.
And so we would ad nauseum listen to Chumbawamba. But it is... I think as I've gotten older, to see music that I grew up with in commercials...
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm not that old, but I am. Heck, I had a caregiver, my very first... caregiver after Dan and I got married, and he said, hey, Jennifer, do you want to listen to some oldies? And I'm thinking he's going to switch the radio to the Temptations and the Beach Boys. But he switches it to the oldies, and they're playing music from the 80s. And I'm like, ouch, I'm not old enough for my music to be oldies, but it is.
Need a secondary name for that. There's going to be oldies, which is actual old music. But then that's not old music to those people either. So right, it's like,
And it's the reality. Dan said something like, music 30 years ago from right now is the 90s. Yeah. Well, in the 90s, 30 years ago was the 60s. But when my dad was a kid, oldies would have been from the 30s. And I'm like, did music really? I'm sure it existed.
Oh, yeah.
But they didn't have.
It just wasn't as widespread and as easy to get as now is. I was talking to my grandma because we have the car ride on Monday. We're driving to Ann Arbor. And so it's, you know, it's a 2-hour drive and then 2 hours back. And I, like, with her dementia and stuff, like, I'm always trying to find like an avenue to like brighten her eyes, basically. And we were talking about music because I remember her listening to stuff when I was a little kid. And I was asking her, I was like, well, what kind of music do you like? Well, who's your favorite, you know, recording artist or whatever? And she was talking about people I'd never heard of. And so I was like writing them all down. And I was like, oh, I'll get it all together so that when we're on the car ride, we can listen to stuff. And I was just like, she was like, oh, you don't have to buy anything. I'm like, I don't have to buy anything. And I was like, brought up Spotify, and I'm just like, Patsy Cline, Plank, right there. And she's just like looking at me like, wow. And I'm like, we live in the future, right? And she's like, yeah, this is great.
You're like magic. You said that. But I know my girlfriend Joanna, when we were younger, in taking a car ride, and it was the most incredible thing that we could just sit in the car and listen to the radio, and you didn't have to worry about conversation. Not that I would worry about conversation, but it wasn't uncomfortable just because you're listening to music and that's got you each thinking whatever you think. And music fills that space, so there's no awkward silence.
Well, and it's like a shared thing that it's just like, you know, because you had the music and you listened and you understand and, yeah, it's just a shared medium. And obviously, you talk, you know, the 30s thing, Patsy Cline, and, you know, the 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever. It's almost like timeless, and there's always music. There's always things, and every generation can relate to music.
Good song's a good song.
Yeah.
And that's you introduced me to that Springsteen song, Jackson Cage. And I don't know that my response was the same as yours. But I listened to it with a little bit different, with knowing what it did for you. it totally kind of flipped a song that I was like, oh, this isn't really all that interesting. Or, I mean, it's a good song, but then to know the deeper meaning for you. Do you know what I mean? Just how, like, I don't know you, Ryan, if you ever listen to something where somebody else says, oh, this really means a lot to me. And it changes the song.
Yeah, yeah.
It normally could have been garbage or something. You would have just skipped over the radio, you know?
Yeah. Do you guys like it when you find out, like, the artist inspiration for a song? Or would you rather not know? Like, if there's a song you really, really like, and you're like, this is emotional to me, and then you find out about what it's really about, does that... Have you ever had that ruin a song for you?
Once you see how the sausage is made, you don't care.
Yeah, kind of. It doesn't taste as good. I don't know that it's ruined it, but sometimes, like, I will sing a song. Dan knows this, and he will tell me it's part of my charm, but I will totally mess up the lyrics. And if Bruce did not intend those lyrics, I think mine are better. Mm. If not better, they're more, they're just what I think they should be. And Dan will tell me what they really are. And I'm like, no. I'm going with my way and we'll just continue singing it that way. And so sometimes I think if somebody could tell me like why they wrote the song, mm-hmm. I'm like, but I still like it. You know, you make it. And that's selfish, but you do.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm just like, I couldn't find out what his inspiration, what his intent was, but it would not change my perspective, and it wouldn't ruin it, because I'm just like, okay, that's your take on it, but this is mine. How about you?
I said I wouldn't mention him, so I'm not going to mention him.
Oh, no.
I found out like the inspiration for us, like a very melancholy kind of early Metallica song. It's out their second album. It's often like it's been linked to like a kid who committed suicide in the 90s or something. They're like, it's all their fault, it's all their blah blah blah. But it is one of those songs that like when I was bummed out or sad, like I would listen to it and I'm just like, you know, he felt this way too. We're good. Cool. And then I found out it's because like all their gear got stolen from their first album and stuff. And like they had such a signature sound that James got so depressed or whatever and felt terrible, and then they just this beautiful song came out of it, and it's like, whoa, it's about gear, but in the same time, like the emotion is still yeah. But it kind of like every time I'm like, he's just thinking about a Marshall amp that got stolen out of the back of a truck.
So that totally
but
changes.
It is, you know, it's like a budding artist, and then they have like this, like I said, their signature sound, and then someone comes and just knocks their legs out. So it's like, oh man, how can we ever do this again? Like, were we tied to our, you know, was our art tied to this, you know, machinery basically, or can we keep going? And then, you know, they kept going,
obviously.
And the song's called Fade to Black. If anybody wants to listen to it, it's one of my favorite songs. A bunch of people have done acoustic covers of it, which I love, like sometimes more than the actual song. Like, it's so good.
Dovetailing off something you've said, it was an interesting choice of words. You had talked about budding stars. I don't know if it's just me or if it's if either of you or anyone out there, when you find music and you think you're the only person that has ever really discovered the band and you don't want to keep it for yourself and you don't begrudge success on the artist, but you're like, I thought that was my little treasure and now other people are listening to it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Where they get more popular and you're like...
We referenced him, that Cam Cole guy that I showed you guys the video of, like, he's been in like a famous TV show, so people are obviously starting to figure out who he is, but like my old Twitter account, like I tweeted at him a couple times and he followed me back and I was like, holy crap, this famous musician dude is like, but he doesn't have that many followers or he's not verified or anything like that. He's just like a dude doing music in London and he's technically homeless, like he lives in a truck or whatever. That, I mean, it's a really nice like built out like studio kind of thing, but like I was thinking about that, I was like, if he got huge it would probably ruin his thing, because like he plays on the side of the road with you know, he sits on his speaker and plays, and so like if he got faint, I mean he recorded an album, so like he's not just, you know, a poor homeless dude or anything like that, but like him getting musician famous could like ruin that, you know, the specialness of what he does, I guess.
And I totally agree. I mean, just to where it is, you like just having that to you. And I mean, obviously, Springsteen's huge. You know, he's got a huge following and stuff.
But I think just, I've heard of him.
But
I think
it's
you mentioned him once or twice before.
I was going to say, but it's just, yeah, it's just like, if he obviously has hits, you know, he's never had a number one hit. And that's my Springsteen education for the day.
Holy moly.
It never had a number one hit. But yeah, you're just like, you like that cult following. You like that smallness of it. I mean, it's just like, you know, Metallica, it's just like, were they ready to play arenas? Were they ready to be that huge? And you like having sort of that thing, you know, on some levels. I like that Springsteen repulses some of my friends and they can't stand it because it's just like, that's me. You know, that's something that I have. We're not all YouTube followers and
yeah. Never like YouTube. Never.
But I think that's really interesting that you want to kind of keep it to yourself and it's not selfishness. You certainly share your musical taste, but deep down at the core, if you have that connection, you want to keep it special just for you, you know, if that sounds special, like selfish and crazy. But I remember when Metallica got really popular. I'm older than you.
Yeah. And you know, when the Black Album came out in the 90s or whatever.
They blew up and people were just not fond of them anymore because they were just their own little band and now they're hugely successful.
Yep. To harp on it, but that was one thing that, like, you know, I discovered them in like 88 or 90 or whatever before the Black Album came, like just before it came out. I saw the video for One and I was like, what is this? Like, yeah. It blew my little mind. I was like 6 or 7 or something, and I was like, this is amazing. When I find something I like, I will immediately share it with people I think might also like it. And I know that could, you know, that adds to the spread of the thing and then the band gets big and, you know, everybody hates it. But like, I also am a fan when somebody takes a huge swing at doing something different, even if they miss. Metallica tried a thing with Lou Reed before he died where they had him sing on completely original songs that they all wrote together. And it is a stinker. Woof. No good. But they tried, you know, they tried something completely different.
Right. And yeah, and the number of people, I think you referenced it to the one of the last times we were talking about Johnny Cash, and you referenced the Nine Inch Nails Johnny Cash
hurt.
I mean, just that they took music, not that Nine Inch Nails wasn't accessible, but maybe not had reached that country audience,
yeah,
and made that song accessible to an audience that Johnny Cash was known to, and just gave that Nine Inch Nails song a little, like...
Yeah, I'm sure Trent Reznor bought so many houses just off the residuals of that cover. Because, and I think he even said, like, after it came out, he goes, well, it's his song now. He's just yeah. Yep.
Like, once he let it, it's like, okay, I'm never going to have that kind of success that Johnny Cash had.
Yeah.
So, that's cool.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because it was just, you remember that from our MS group the other night when we were talking about something with music and somebody brought that up. They were just like, have you ever heard Johnny Cash and Hurt? And it's just like...
Yeah, so many people don't know it's not his song.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just that, you know, just that impact and just how it just reaches out beyond... you know, the Nine Inch Nails things into the country, into this. And again, then ties it back now to multiple sclerosis. And they were just talking about, oh, and how it talks so much to the levels of like what you're dealing with multiple sclerosis. And I'm just like, I need to listen to it again. And
yeah, he also did a cover of a Soundgarden song around the same time. I think it was Rusty Cage, but I'm not 100% positive. But that one obviously didn't catch on as huge as Hurt did, but it was a pretty good like rendition of it because it was the same deal, just him and an acoustic guitar. And it's like, this is all right, man. Yeah.
Well, and you had said like something to the effect of, oh, when other bands then cover songs. And you're just
I love that so much. I love hearing different takes on a like, I mean, because it's about the only medium you can really do that. Like, you can't paint I mean, you can paint like a likeness of someone else's painting, but that's basically stealing. Comedians can't do that. You can't go off and, you know, do someone else's jokes. But with music, it's like, yeah, it's this thing that you can have your own take on, and then that can become more famous than the original thing.
And, you know, so keeping the Springsteen theme, but I mean, yeah, he's had no number one hit, but it's like Manfred Mann, you know, redid Blinded by the Light, and that went to number one, and just all the other things. But it's like, I guess my question would be for both of you, so somebody covers song, I mean, Jennifer, if somebody covered Corduroy, or, you know, Ryan, when somebody covers a song you liked, it can be a good cover, but does it make it, are you more likely to not like it because it's not as good as the original, or does it make you like it even more, or does it make you want to go back and listen to the original?
Well, I'm going to go to your man, Bruce Springsteen, and a song that I grew up with, Dancing in the Dark, not exactly one of my favorites. I know, I said that, and I love you, but it wasn't one of my favorites. And then John Legend, the piano player, and he's much more than that. He's an amazing musician. But he covered and redid Springsteen's Dancing in the Dark.
Oh, cool.
And it's amazing, and I was just like, wow, that's really good. And I go back to Tiffany. Ooh, that's dating me. But Tiffany did I Think We're Alone Now. And I totally remember I was in like eighth grade and my mom saying, oh, this isn't as good as the original, because that was her music. So you ask about covers. I don't know. I think it would be interesting if somebody redid Corduroy, and that's a really good question. How did you, Dan, as a Springsteen fan, feel when John Legend or when any band, because a number of bands have redone Springsteen?
Well, and it depends, because I mean, there were several country artists. I think it was, I forget the name of the Mavericks. I think they had covered a couple of Springsteen songs off of the Tunnel of Love, and you're just like, yeah, it's okay, and other ones are bad, but I was leery when I saw John Legend was going to perform Dancing in the Dark. I'm thinking, oh, good Lord. But I mean, when all is said and done, and I will profess that is probably the best Springsteen cover I ever heard, because he totally took it and just reworked it. And just, I mean, yeah, I'm a huge fan of John Legend because it's so different from Springsteen, said it's like, it is like its own original song. So yeah, it because I'm not hyper protective. If it's good, it's good. I mean, John Legend did a really good job on that.
A lot of bands that I like started out just, or you know, Metallica specifically, like they've released albums of covers. Like that's something they've done since their second album ever. Like they put out a B-side that was all covers of other people's songs, and they called it like Garage Days Released or Re-released or something like that, and they've kept doing it, and because that's how they started as a band, was they played other people's obscure songs. So like, maybe they'll think these are our songs, and like they didn't say anything. So it's like, that's how they built their momentum, kind of. And but like, if you make it your own, and that's the thing, well, they've covered like a Queen song, they covered Stone Cold Crazy, and then that was the first Grammy they ever won. Oh. Was for a cover, and they didn't go get it because they were so pissed that they didn't get the Grammy for their album that came out before that was a B-side on. But like, they took the Queen song, and it's so much faster, and it's, you know, a different, completely different voice, obviously, but it's like they made it their own version of the cool song, and I can listen to both of them, and I'm like, I like the Metallica one more, but the Queen one is fun too. Like, they're both just, yeah, all right, let's do this. You know, like, you know, they kind of bring the same emotion, but it's just done differently enough. But when somebody takes a cover and does it completely different, like there's a band called Gus, and I don't know if it is actually just one dude or not named Gus, but they covered the Don't Fear the Reaper, and it's like, you've probably heard it in something because it's ultra slow. Like the guitar pick is like dun, dun, dun. Like, it's so slow, and like, he just whispers the song basically. And I've seen it in like a couple like funeral scenes of something, and it's just like, oh, this is emotional.
But I'm just thinking, I'm sure you all have seen bands and I don't want to say the particular band because I'm not 100% certain, but where they're starting out and they play covers, and they play the covers well, and they're fun, and you're rocking, and you're having a good time. But at the same time, you know they have their own music. And you're thinking, okay, stop. You're at the place where you can do your music. And it's like, just, you know, that. Like, we're happy for you that you can play covers, but don't forget that you have your own.
For some musicians, especially musicians I've known, like I did a series on music in Mount Pleasant while I was in college and, you know, talked to a bunch of different bands and, you know, a lot of them had their own music and stuff. And I was like, oh, you know, but you play covers too. And they're like, yeah, because covers are fun. It's like when we're hanging out, we're friends and we have fun together playing music. Our songs have our emotions and all that, blah, blah, blah. But anybody else's song, it's just us getting together and jamming, just having a good time. So like, I totally get that.
And that's really, I mean, that's good to know that. Yeah. Thank you, because I'd never heard that. But, you know, if musicians have fun playing other people's music, then no wonder we get emotionally attached to certain songs.
I mean,
we're having a crappy, tough day with our MS.
Yeah, because they're fans of music too. So
yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
In case in point, I mean, just the power that is music. That, you know, we were talking about MS mantras and music therapy. And then you just, you know, you extend it and you just conversation about music, period. And so no wonder it has that effect on you emotionally in whatever life deals with you. I mean, really.
Yeah. Have you ever met anybody that doesn't like music? Like, I don't remember who it was, but I worked with somebody that was like, oh, you know, what do you listen to or whatever? And he's like, I don't really listen to music. It's like, what? It's like, yeah, he just apparently never has heard a song that made him feel a certain way or mad or angry or whatever.
Wow.
Didn't listen to stuff in the car. Just didn't, like, it could be on. It didn't bother him. But, like, he had no emotional reaction to any music he'd ever heard, apparently. I don't know if he was just saying that to be, like, a hipster weirdo or something. But, like, I never saw the dude, like, rock out to anything.
And I would think that was sad.
Yeah, right? Doesn't that seem like a bummer?
Yeah, just to not make that emotional connection.
I mean, maybe TV does it for him or something else where it's...
Like reading or something.
Yeah,
yeah. Maybe it's a different avenue. Some other creative something.
Yeah, that was just like... I can't think of anybody that I know that was like, oh, yeah, I don't listen to music. No big deal.
A life without chocolate and music. Those are lives I don't want to live.
At this point, yeah, I want to go and listen to Springs. I want to go listen to, you know, the music that we talked about just to have that emotional, it's like an emotional release in listening to music and having the mantras and just the words, just the things, just to move forward. I think that's when, you know, we talked about in the last episode about dealing with loss and dealing with grief. And then we talked about how things can pick you up out of that. And that's why we talked about the mantras and music therapy and living with multiple sclerosis. And so let us know what you think. What is your mantra? What music helps dig you up out of, lift you, I guess you're not digging any further, but what lifts you
up?
What digs you up?
What lifts you up and lifts you out? And I know that my standing frame, I see the sad thing sitting over there. We broke a screw. Oh. And so I haven't been able to elevate in my standing frame for about a week. And just having this conversation about how corduroy can get me going, that's going to get my butt taken that to get that fixed so that I can use that and that will empower me. And I think music is a good tool for empowerment. And so, like Dan said, what gets you going? What gets you moving? What do you use to help challenge you through the challenges of multiple sclerosis? Or just as a caregiver, a person living life, what gets you through?
And so let us know if you can check us out on our website is acoupletakesonms.com, or you can tweet us. The show is @coupletakesonms, and reach out to us and tell us what lifts you up. And you can also email our producer. How can they email you, Ryan?
It is ACTOMSpodcast@gmail.com.
So just let us know and go to our website, acoupletakesonms.com, to find where you can find us on your favorite podcast app. If you listen to it on your app, please review it and provide a comment to let us know how we're doing and what more we can do to connect with you in the MS world. And until next time, this has been A Couple Takes on MS. I'm Dan Digman.
And I'm Jennifer Digman. Dan's walking.
And Jennifer's rolling.
But together, we're moving forward.
I love that. That was great. It was like inverted. Sweet. Goodbye.
Sorry.
No, that was perfect. I seriously, that was good. That's.
I had it.
That was. Oh, yeah, that was a good one. Yep. I'm just hitting stop. That was good.